Good evening and welcome to Late Debate. I'm Katie Hannan, and joining me in studio tonight I have Fianna Fáil TD for Galway East and party spokesperson on Children and Youth Affairs, Anne Rabbitt, Sinn Féin TD for Carlow Kilkenny and spokesperson on Children and Youth Affairs, Kathleen Funtian, Fine Gael Senator and Shannon spokesperson on Finance, Kieran O'Donnell, Labour Senator and spokesperson on Education and Skills, Gaelga and the Gaeltacht, Éan O'Riordan, and columnist and barrister Colette Brown. We want to hear from you, so get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email us on latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebaterte. Now, before we get into debating the main politics of the day, Éan, I know you want to pay tribute to a young man who lost his life very tragically over the weekend.
I do, and thanks for offering me the opportunity to do so. And I want to thank very much the all the political parties represented here and across Ireland who have made wonderful statements about Cormac O'Brien. He was 19 years of age. I knew him well. He was a genuinely beautiful person. It was actually hard to know what college he attended, because every time I went to a college, he seemed to be there. It was hard to know what constituency he was a member of, because every time I went to a constituency, he seemed to be there. And we're kind of in a daze and quite wounded the last few days in the Labour Party, and we're walking around. And I actually thought I saw him yesterday when I was walking from head office back to Leinster House. Just to say, I suppose, to anybody who has somebody in their life or people in their lives, just to recognise how beautiful they are, because you never know what could possibly happen to them. Cormac was out on Saturday, as Labour youth people do. He was at a protest. He went and spoke politics through the early morning. He met for his mother for a drink. He was singing songs in Club an Conaire until the early morning. He was cycling home and he was killed. The last thing I want to say just very quickly is greatly appreciate that we all feel we're part of a political family this week to a degree, and the Lord Mayor of Dublin, Paul McAuliffe, has made the Mansion House available to the family for his funeral on Thursday, and that's a beautiful gesture for a beautiful young man. We've genuinely in the Labour Party lost a leader.
A huge, huge loss. Our condolences to yourselves in the Labour Party, to his family, and to all his friends and colleagues that we know have been stunned and desperately saddened by that tragic accident this weekend. Okay, we have to move on to events of the day, and there was some rowdy, if we use that phrase, scenes in the Dáil today. There's a sense, I think, that the pre-election temperature is definitely rising. This is what happened. Micheál Martin asked the Taoiseach if he had asked Dara Murphy to refer himself to the Dáil Ethics Committee for an investigation of his expenses claims.
I and my advisers have discussed with former Deputy Murphy a number of options as to how an inquiry can be carried out. That is one of the options we've discussed with them, and it is something that is still a work in progress. But I think there should be an inquiry, and he has already agreed that he will submit to an inquiry, and I believe he should pay back any expenses if that inquiry finds against him. But I would like to know from you, Deputy, given that I've answered your question, in relation to sitting Oireachtas members who are under investigation by our Ethics Committee, like Lisa Chambers, like Deputy Dooley, like Deputy Collins, like Deputy Senator Clifford Lee, who still has not apologised for some of the remarks that she made. Are those people going to be ratified as Fianna Fáil candidates in the next general election when there is still a cloud of suspicion over them, when they're still under investigation? Will you, sir, answer that straight question?
I think we're unfortunately going to be subject to a lot of this until the general election. I have a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old at home, and if they behaved the way the two leaders in this house did, I would take them into the corner and have a good talking to them.
And that was Piers Doherty ending that exchange in the Dáil earlier today. Kieran O'Donnell, Lisa Chambers says, and we'll get back to the Dara Murphy affair in a moment, but I want to go on to Lisa Chambers, because I suppose she is still in the Dáil. She is a rising star in Fianna Fáil, and she says she is being politically targeted, she's been singled out, and that you're only trying to divert attention away from Dara Murphy and his issues.
No, I don't think that's the case. I think All we're really pointing out is that it has come to the attention, it was in a Sunday Independent article at the weekend, that Lisa Chambers voted seven times for Timmy Dooley. Timmy Dooley didn't appear to be in the chamber at the time.
Now,
and we're just pointing that
out. Just to be clear, Timmy Dooley has said categorically he was in the chamber at the time, that he's checked his notes, and he was. And as we all know, you can know who's in the chamber actually at any one time, because the cameras only capture a limited amount of
the scene. But I expect if he was in the chamber, he would have voted. Right, so I think.
Well, unless you have evidence to the contrary, I can't
we don't have evidence to the contrary, to the opposite either. So I think really all we were doing was dealing with the particular issues. People are elected to vote in the respective houses of the Dáil and the Shannon, and it's something I think that we take seriously as a party.
Have you ever voted for somebody else, Ciarán?
Not that I'm aware of. I was actually reflecting on it, and if I have voted for anyone, it would be someone maybe that would be 2 or 3 feet away, but that's a very, very hard question. I may have.
So you're saying that if there is the distance
I've never, physically, at the time... I've never voted for anyone that wasn't in the chamber.
Well, Lisa Chambers would say that is not the case in this instance either. And as you know, your own Taoiseach, several very senior members of the Dáil have all admitted that they have voted for other people at various times.
The evidence is from what appears to be, we'll say, in terms of the film of the actual, on the 17th of January, that Lisa Chambers voted in Timmy Dooley's seat 7 times. It would appear as if Stephen Donnelly was in Lisa Chambers' seat. And suddenly you have 3 votes, 3 members all voting, but there only appears to be 2 people in the seats in terms of Lisa Chambers and Stephen Donnelly. And really, there's no sight of Timmy Dooley within the chamber.
Anne Rabbitt.
Yes. Let's put it in context here. The camera shot can only show 45 people, first and foremost. And I have to thank you for your fairness of it, because Timmy has come clearly out and said he was in the chamber. To be quite honest with you, Stephen Donnelly was sitting in Lisa's chair or seat or whatever like that. Stephen Donnelly's button was pressed up at the back, if you can see that. Timmy, we often took calls ourselves. We'd walk at the back of the chambers, we'd make calls and you come back down again. When a constituent rings, you answer the phone, to be quite honest with you. It could have been an important call or whatever like that. Timmy has clearly said he was in the chamber.
Kathleen.
Look, that's up really to the Dáilethics Committee to actually adjudicate.
So why do we keep rehashing over it again? Because are we going to keep doing this till the general election comes around? So Micheál, my leader, asked a question last week in relation to Dara Murphy. So when we ask a question, is it every time that we ask a question you're going to come back and bite at us and keep bringing it back up?
Taoiseach has answered the question in terms of Dara Murphy.
But he was quite condescending today in his approach.
Investigation is to take place. It's now a question of what type of investigation.
Can I just
say...
Have you spoken to Lisa about this, Anne?
I was talking to Lisa coming up in the car here this evening. I actually checked in with her to see how she was doing and everything else like that. Because to be quite honest with you, when you think of it, let's do the arithmetic. There's 158 people inside that can vote. It's not like 159 or 171. The numbers are the numbers. We're all whipped. The red buttons are going to become the red buttons or the green buttons within the larger parties. That's how it's managed. If they were sitting in the wrong seats, she's already apologised. Timmy has apologised. Niall Collins has apologised. I think at this stage, like, let's clean up your side of the house now. Come out. Have your review done, and let's just move on.
Do you think Lisa Chambers has any questions to answer out of this latest issue?
If Lisa has questions to answer, I'm sure the Ethics Committee will write to Lisa in the format, and she will answer.
That's
whatever.
That's not a no, I have to say, Anne.
No. What I'm saying is Lisa's well able to speak for Lisa herself, to be quite honest with you.
Well, we did ask her to join us this evening, but she wasn't available.
All right. I can't answer for that either, Katie. But all I will say to you is like, if the Ethics Committee write to Lisa, Lisa at all times has been upfront and prepared to answer questions.
OK, Kathleen, you've been trying to get in. Yeah, can I just, first of all, have you ever voted for other people?
No, I haven't, never. And I have to say, I think whether it's voting for somebody else, whether it's sitting in the wrong seat, or whether it is having a second job, it's all totally wrong. I mean, you're elected to do a certain job. That's your full-time job. You should not have a second job outside of it. And I believe that you should be either present in the vote. Now, there's always days, and there's days where I've missed votes myself. So I understand that people might not be able to be present on a certain day, but you certainly don't sit in somebody else's seat or get someone else to vote for you. And the seats are numbered. I think it's basic, like cop on, basically. Do you know where you're sitting? I think you would expect junior and senior infants children to act more appropriately. But I will say that I do think at times these issues, while they're really important that the public know about them, that they get answers because people are getting very well paid, I do feel that at times it does distract. For example, we have a very serious issue of insurance and possibly loads of creches having to close this Friday.
We will discuss
doctors
that.
Doctors are talking about going on strike. There's a lot of serious issues and it can distract. That's not to say it's not an important issue, and questions definitely need to be answered, because all I think it does is feed voter apathy. Look at the low turnouts we've had recently. People get disillusioned with politics, and politicians do not help themselves in this case when they act like that.
Colette Brown.
I find the imperiousness of Leo Varadkar a bit hard to take when it comes to this issue. Now, the least we should expect from our politicians is that they can sit in their assigned seat and press the button occasionally and press the correct button. Having said that, when this issue initially came to light, Noel Rock wrote to the Dáil Ethics Committee and he said it was an issue of significant public importance. It had the potential to erode the legitimacy of votes cast and indeed erode confidence in our democracy. Now, 2 years ago, there were three opposition bills blocked by the government because they wouldn't design it a money message. Today, that number stands at 60. So what's more likely to erode confidence in democracy, and which shows a greater lack of respect for our democracy, for our constitution, for TD's ability to pass legislation, to vote in the Dáil? Is it the occasional, a minority of Fianna Fáil TDs occasionally pressing the wrong button in the Dáil, or is it the government blocking legislation from passing through the Houses of the Oireachtas after it receives a majority vote in the Dáil on its first vote? Now, I think this is a really important issue. TDs are elected. There's only 158 of them elected. They're elected to represent their constituents. They're elected to pass legislation. And the government is preventing people in the Dáil from doing their job, preventing them from passing legislation. And it has been doing it with increasing frequency over the last 2 years. Why? Because it's a minority government, because it can't stop TDs in the Dáil voting by legitimate means. So it's holding all of these bills, nearly 60 bills at the moment, to ransom. They've gone into cold storage for an indefinite period of time. I think it shows it's serious disrespect, and especially if Fine Gael are going to continually make a big song and dance about this issue and start pointing fingers at Fianna Fáil for occasionally pressing the wrong button when they're voting.
Éan O'Riordan.
Well, look, I think the button thing is more sloppy than conspiracy. I think I agree, though, with Kathleen when she says that the public hate this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. They hate to hear the sort of stuff that politicians are not behaving themselves in the chamber. The chamber of Dáil Éireann, and I was there for 5 years, is deemed as a sacred space. So if you're not kind of carrying yourself in a manner befitting the chamber, well, then, you know, that really erodes public confidence in us. I have voted for somebody who has asked me to vote for them if they're like 2 feet away or 3 feet away. Press my button there for me. They're just in behind you. It's still a bit of an ask to ask if somebody asks you to do it, you know, but you'd never do it for somebody who's outside the chamber. The second point I make is just to agree with what Colette has done. I mean, look, the high horse that the Taoiseach decided to get on today, and only about 3 weeks ago he was kept in power because of the vote of a guy who has criminal convictions for tax irregularities, a vote from a guy whose comments in the Dáil have been described as racist, a vote from a guy who had to resign from the cabinet because of dinners he was having with a particular investor into broadband.
Okay, just in relation to that now, let's not put all of these very different things into the same box. Let's be clear about this. There's no suggestion that there was anything corrupt
He still resigned over it. And a vote from a guy who resigned the next day, Dara Murphy. Now, that is what kept Leo Varadkar in power 3 weeks ago. And now he's going to get excited about a deputy who apparently some staffer in Fine Gael has been trawling through the old the footage of what happens in voting sequences in the Dáil. And that's the thing he's going to get excited about. Look, as Colette quite rightly said.
Well, I mean, you're entitled to make those points. But the only point that I must make back to you is that in all of those cases, all of those are TDs that have been elected by constituencies, by their constituents.
And they are entitled to vote. And we're all supposed to believe that there's no individual deals with any of them. The point I'm going to make is this. This Oireachtas is stopped functioning.
Yeah,
there is no, there's no legislation happening. We need an election drastically, really, so we can actually get a government in place who might actually deliver something. Because I think the people are beginning to notice things aren't really the way they should be.
Can I just
okay?
Come back?
Yeah, Kieran, you're beautiful. Can I just say we've got a couple of texts in from your last comment. If Kieran did press the button of a colleague who was three feet away, and indeed Aon, you said the same thing. The question is why or she didn't press their own button. 3 feet is one stride, and then I find it hard to believe your guest, which is you, Kieran. Can't categorically state whether he voted for someone or not if he takes voting so seriously. Strange to say
because
the least.
I suspect in the chamber, right, you might have someone, and Aon and myself are both in the Shannon. It's a pretty tight space, and you might have someone literally. We are given a specific amount of time to press a button. You might have someone on the phone, and that's the honest. Explanation.
But I think I've done it like once or twice.
Yeah, I mean, to
it
be honest
like
with you,
it every day.
Can I just go back to Colette, right? And just to make a point, right? And Fine Gael are in government. Governments have to make decisions. And governments have to make decisions around and choices around the use.
Well, hang on, there's a very particular reason a money message is ascribed, and that's if legislation is going to cost the state if there's going to be a financial expenditure. If there's not going to be any financial expenditure.
If you don't want me to give an explanation.
Okay.
No, it's important. I want to make this
point. I'm going to let you.
Governments have to make decisions. It's the responsibility to make decisions.
They have to concoct reasons to block opposition legislation.
But Chuck, if you don't want to actually hear what I'm going to say. In a normal situation, governments would have an absolute majority. And oppositions bring forward, I've been in two Dáils, bring forward various motions and various bills which will cost the Exchequer. And the government make a decision not to go with that particular motion that's put forward. It's the same.
So you have Can I put you in, Colette, in relation to this point?
Yeah.
Can you say with your hand on heart that all of the bills that have been denied money messages by the government were all bills that would have cost serious money to the Exchequer? Because there are any number of them that I can name to you now where you're talking about incidental.
There would always be a charge. There would always be a charge in
the Exchequer.
The
printing costs from the Dáil printer.
Governments have to make decisions.
So the government, So what you're basically saying is the government has to play dirty because it's a minority government and it has to abuse an arcane procedure that exists for a particular reason because you want to get your way.
That's what you're saying.
But I think it's
governments have to make decisions, particular decisions, responsible decisions. You might not agree with them, but that's the role of government.
But when I think about the bills that are held up, and Colette, thank you for bringing it back to what it's supposed to be about. I think about the gambling control regulator. I think about the internet safety controller. I think about all these things, and I think about children and vulnerable children, because that's what I'm spokesperson for. Like, I have brought through Fagan's Law. I've brought through 13 pieces of legislation.
But opposition bills have come through. Which is a very different feature.
Okay, can we have one voice, please, Ken?
Yeah. We're very fortunate that my colleague James Brown in his mental health bill got through. We're very fortunate that Michael McGrath got some pieces of work through. But you know what? Week in, week out, we're doing certain things with really good pieces of legislation.
Fair to say that all bills are not got through.
Can I stop you 1 second and put one point
here?
We know, and it's an absolute matter of public record, that the number of money messages, the number of bills that have been presented and have been stopped from proceeding because of money messages, has risen exponentially. So are we saying that just this particular Dáil is bringing forward extremely expensive legislation?
I'm making this as a judgment call. In previous Dáils, you would have very few opposition private members' bills, and there would be known. Alan Shatter brought a bill through many years ago.
This particular Dáil is
a Dáil where I think there's a lot more legislation coming through from various parties over other Dáils, and consequently.
But aren't you treating them like children? We'll let you bring your private members' bill through, but we'll stop it before it can go anywhere.
Many of the private member bills have actually gone through and in legislation. Sinn Féin brought a bill through last week, the insurance consumers bill. So it's not fair to say that bills are not going through.
That was an amendment to satisfy the bingo people who were going.
It's still a bill that there is a charge in this bill.
Okay. It was a one-word amendment.
Can we go back to
Kieran,
please? Can we go back to Dowragate?
Yeah.
And
it's a gate now. The gate? Taoiseach,
look, everything's a gate. Hang around here long enough, you'll be a gate. The Dara Murphy,
well,
the Dara Murphy affair has been it's been rolling now, simmering along. Until last weekend in the Taoiseach's interview on with Brendan O'Connor on the Marion Show, that was the first time that I got a sense to hint from the Taoiseach that he was in any way concerned about the fact that somebody could maybe fob in and then spend his days somewhere else on other business. Isn't this very... And now telling the Dáil today...
That wouldn't be the flavour I would have got. I think at this stage in time, what we need now is an investigation quickly.
But sure, the Taoiseach knew about this for 2 years, Kieran O'Donnell. At what moment did he wake up and decide we need now an investigation?
Well, he was a TDO for a long period of time. He's taken up a job in Europe now. So I think
he's had a job in Europe for the last 2 years.
He's taking up a permanent post with the Commission, right? And the situation...
So it was just temporary for 2 years.
Is this something that I would like to see hadn't happened? Absolutely. I think now what we need to do is get a speedy conclusion and investigation.
Ian?
I mean, like, where do you start? I mean, look... I mean, look, God love you, Kieran. Like, I know you have to come in and defend this stuff. And I was that guy in the last government, did the odd time, and it wasn't fun. But, like, we rarely had a situation where somebody has clearly behaved as poorly as... And the sad thing is, he's so likeable and he's so nice. That which I remember of him, because I haven't actually bumped into him in a long time. Like... You know, you have this, and it's just, I always go back to a pattern of behaviour, the stuff that is excused by Fine Gael, the Verona Murphy stuff in the Wexford by-election, which was absolutely poisonous stuff that could not, let me just finish, in fairness, which could not be defended, okay? Then you have the Dara Murphy situation, and then you have Maria Bailey, who has done something apparently which is completely against what your average Fine Gael voter would consider to be acceptable, and taken off the ticket immediately. And Dara Murphy swung around the place in Europe for 2 years and no mention of the ethics of that behaviour. And then a totally different standard for Verona Murphy. Oh, well, sure, you apologise. It's grand if you keep her on the ticket. And it seems to me that a little bit of double jobbery is grand. A little bit of racism we can get beyond. But somebody who has some kind of an insurance question mark, that has to be completely flung out because that's what we hold to a higher standard.
Or maybe it's because she's a woman. Did you ever think of that?
Possibly.
Because when you see what Lisa Chambers is going through, when you see what Maria Bailey has gone through, to be quite honest, there's a pattern established.
I think the thing is, all of those people, unfortunately, have brought themselves into disrepute.
I just want to be very careful here. There's a lot of loose talk being thrown around about what people have and haven't said and what people have taken from them. So let's just be very careful about. You just suggested there a little bit of racism is okay with the Taoiseach. I just want to be careful because we're not in the Dáil Chamber. We do not have privilege. There is interpretations being taken about what people are
saying. I think the reaction to Maria Bailey versus the reaction to Dara Murphy versus the reaction to Verona Murphy is stark.
Well, let's talk about Verona Murphy, actually, and the Taoiseach's comments about her at that interview again at the weekend, which I think did indicate that her days may be numbered as a Fine Gael candidate. What do you think, Kathleen?
Well, I mean, I would have thought, given her comments during the by-election, and I went down canvassing with my own colleague down there, Johnny Mython, who was running for us, I thought she should have been deselected at that stage. That's the appropriate behaviour, in my opinion. And I don't think that somebody that holds those views is suitable to run for office. I think, you know, far too many people are bringing the role of a TD into disrepute. And I just think that it brings politics into disrepute. It gives everyone in the public the chance to say, if we move on to the next stage now.
She apologised at the time, and then the Taoiseach canvassed for her in a kind of a secret canvass. But he did canvass with her in the wake of that apology. But I think from the remarks that he made in that weekend interview, where he said he was taken aback, I think was the language.
He's able to say it now because the election is over, and he obviously didn't want the embarrassment of deselection during the process.
But she's still a candidate for Fine Gael, isn't she?
I don't think she has been selected for a general election. The point I'm trying to make is that all of this just allows people to say there's no point in voting, it's all the same, everybody is, you know, somewhat corrupt or whatever. And that really angers me as somebody who is not overly long elected to the Dáil and who is genuinely trying. And there's so many TDs that are genuinely in there for the right reasons. And you have people bringing it into disrepute. I mean, how dare somebody think they could have a second job and be swanning off to Europe to their second job and also taking their TD salary? That's the way I feel about it.
Kieran, do you think Verona Murphy is going to be a candidate for Fine Gael in the general
election?
Well,
I mean, I would. That's very much for the party and the national executive to review.
Do you think
they
she should
review
be?
Tickets. Well, I put it this way, I suppose, two aspects. I wouldn't agree with her comments that she made, but she did come out straight away and corrected, and the T-shirt corrected. And secondly, the video that went out the day before was a little bit strange.
With featuring several very
bit,
senior party
strange.
Members.
But ultimately, the decision,
the
problem, on, that,
the
decision on that is way above my pay grade.
Not would you vote for her?
Decision on this is way above my pay grade.
Would you vote for her, though?
Which doesn't arise.
Well, if you're living in Wexford, would you vote for her?
Not exactly very enthusiastic.
just on the comments, she made the comments in three separate publications. It was RTE, it was the Irish Times, and it was the Wexford People. It's not as if she was caught off guard in the pub.
Eoin, with due respect, right, the Taoiseach came out and said straight away they were not the views of
and then went down and camped with her.
What I thought was very interesting.
And she corrected the record straight away herself at the time.
And then put out a video.
About
then put out a video
about
like
the
a victim.
Taoiseach's interview on this station over the weekend was that he said, because, you know, most of us, after she made those comments and her campaign kind of blew up, suspected that they hadn't, you know, sat down and actually had a discussion with this woman to find out, you know, what her views were on a number of different social and political issues. But the Taoiseach said she had actually been asked questions about direct provision and about immigration, and she had given certain answers to Fine Gael staff members, and those answers diverged completely to what she said to the press. So, I mean, you can understand why people in Sinn Féin were caught off guard. Saying that, I think, you know, you referenced yourself, the Taoiseach going down to canvass for her, not informing any of the media, not wanting to have his photograph taken with her. You know, it was...
She was a candidate for the party.
Yeah, I know she was, but I don't think anybody in the party was very happy with that ultimately.
In fairness, she was a candidate for the party.
And I don't think she's going to be standing for the party, which leaves the party with a problem.
Well, I mean, I think she thinks she's still standing for the party. None of us know for sure,
but the writing does seem to be on the wall, and it will leave the party with a problem, because her area is South Wexford and they don't have a candidate in South Wexford.
And
so
they could be a much bigger problem if she decides she wants to run as an independent.
I think that's...
You think that's probably what's going to happen?
I think if she's... And as far as I understand, there hasn't been a selection convention for Fine Gael, and I think that she will run as an independent if not selected.
And nobody will whip her, and she'll say whatever she wants then.
Fine Gael will have to take a decision as a party on who, whether Verona stands Fine Gael or not in Wexford.
But if you read the runes, Kieran, we hear Pascal Donoghue has been down there. We've heard what the Taoiseach had to say over the weekend. If you were Verona Murphy, would you be printing your posters with Fine Gael on them now?
I can't speak for Verona Murphy. All I know is as a party, the views that Verona would express would not have been my views or the party views, and they were made perfectly clear. Any decisions on who are candidates for the party, that's an entire decision for the National Executive. It's like any other party.
OK, I just want to move on now because, and before we leave the whole issue of people running or not running, we got news today that Senator Pádraig Coffey, former TD and, of course, former Minister of State, has announced that he will not contest the next general election for Fine Gael. He was speaking to his local radio station, WLR-FM, today.
The primary reason I'm retiring is because I want to spend more time with my family. And that's the truth. I'm getting emotional now because I'm thinking about that.
That's okay.
I'm a passionate person, right?
Take a drink of water. Yeah. Take a drink of water.
I'm a very passionate person. Anybody that knows me, I am. I fight my corner, and I have done over the years. But I put family first, and I always have done that as well. And I've reflected on that recently, and I know I need to do more for my family. So I've made this decision.
Pádraig Coffey, obviously very emotional there. Mm. It's obviously a very difficult decision for him. Was it made for him, though, in some ways? There was two councillors put on the ticket with him down there. did he maybe feel that the support wasn't there?
I know Paddy a long number of years. We came into the Leinster House in 2007 together. And anyone that knows Paddy would be very robust. He would be very direct, very sound. And I think when I already made the decision, I made contact with him. And I said, it must be a difficult decision for you. And he said, look, Kieran, he said, I made it for family reasons and I'm looking forward to the next challenge. I have to respect that. And, like, we're all in politics. And be honest, Eoin and Anne and Kathleen, we enjoy it, right? But it is tough on family life, right? There's no denying that, right? Yeah. I have family of my own. I regard it as a very private issue for myself and my wife. But that's the way it is. And for us as politicians, our families take the burden. We all enjoy it, if we're being honest. We enjoy the cut and thrust of it. It's something that you do very long hours, but we all enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I think Paddy has made, I think, a personal decision, and I would respect that.
I mean, I know I'm after sort of cutting the legs off Fine Gael there in my previous comments, but I was going to try and make the point that there are so many decent people in every single political party in Leinster House and independents as well, who work so, so hard for the right reasons. Mm. My worry, I mean, Paddy is somebody, I remember being, when I was a Minister of State, his office was across the corridor from me, and I remember him one late Friday night trying to organise his local under-14 G18 that he was a manager of, and this is the type of thing he was doing. He was so, so passionate about his politics and his local community. But there are good, decent people walking away from politics. And there aren't a whole, it isn't as attractive to walk into as maybe it was. It's a difficult space. It's nastier now. It puts a huge strain on your family life. Mm-hmm. Everything is brought into it. And it's a small concern of mine, not a huge one, but a small concern of mine that people are making a judgment call between the type of life you have to lead to win an election. Yeah. And the life you have to lead to be a good family person and a good human being, and the conflict between all those things.
But does anyone really walk away from?
I think if you walk away from politics, you have to walk away completely and totally, because there'll always be another election that some people will spend your
No, but I'm saying, would you ever walk away if you think you have a chance of a seat? That's what I'm saying.
I think you might. I think people will make personal decisions. Paddy has made one here.
What about Fine Gael and Waterford now then?
Well, Fine Gael and Waterford, we've two very good candidates, John Cummins and Damien Gagan, running on the ticket as well.
Who have very low profiles.
I know, I wouldn't say that.
You've lost your two big hitters.
Fairness, Damien is a long-standing councillor. John Cummins was mayor of Waterford. So, you know, politics goes on. There are two very good dynamic candidates in Waterford.
I wish Paddy the very, very best. Look, like, to listen to his interview there, like, it would pull at your heartstrings, to be quite honest with you, because you could hear he's quite emotional about it and everything else. And to come to that stage after 20 years service and you know that you're 6 weeks or 6 months out from the next general election, it has to be very difficult. And to be doing it for the family reasons is totally and utterly, you have to applaud him. And there's days that some days I feel like that myself, to be quite honest with you, for all the reasons that Eoin is just after saying. It's very tough on trying to get that life balance and the sort of person you're supposed to be, and then you're supposed to do that little bit batting then with the social media and everything else. Politics has changed in the last, it's changed in 3 years, not to mind what it's like in the last 20 years since Paddy would have come into it. And like, the kids are getting older and there's more hurling to be done and everything else like that. But at the same time, politics is cruel. And it can be cruel from within the party regime, if you know what I'm trying to say, by people being added to tickets or put on tickets or people feeling squeezed. And I'm not saying that in this particular instance or anything else like that.
Is there any indication of that, Pod?
I wouldn't think so, but like, politics is a very competitive arena.
There's no sentiment in politics at all. No, if you're electable, you're great. If you're not,
you're just voting fodder at the end of the day. Yeah. To be quite honest with you, so as you can win elections.
Well, when it comes down to
politics, is a numbers game.
But that's exactly
and
it.
That's the way it is, and we accept that. That's the stark.
But that's the hard part of it. That's the cruel part, because it goes back to Eoin. There it is. There's a judgment call as to what you're like as a person, as to how you're working as a constituent. And you can have all the polls in the world, but if the people on the ground really like you and they want to re-elect you, party HQ mightn't actually engage with that part of it.
You need a very understanding backup at home.
Yeah, you do. You need great family support.
Yeah.
That's definitely
okay.
crucial.
I'm going to burst into tears in a minute now, so I'm going to just have to move on. It's too much for me.
I don't think anybody listening to this conversation would ever enter.
No, I'm just saying it's very, very
can I leave the room for a minute?
Okay. If anyone needs to take a minute, does anyone need to take a minute?
A run out in politics would be a very, very good education.
You'll be a lot nicer to me the next time you're on, Colette.
Okay, we need to move on because there is a very, very serious issue on the agenda, and that is the whole issue of insurance. Yeah. And two insurance stories over the last couple of days. The one today, massive crisis looming for the creche sector. This is news that the broker, Porrick Smith, has told his clients he's not been able to secure a new insurer to take over 1,300 childcare providers who are all up for renewal on the 31st of December. And of course, this comes in the wake of that report from the central bank on the motor insurance industry, which showed that premiums had increased by 42% since 2009, while cost of claims had fallen by 2.5%. We just tackle, Anne, if you... The creche issue, that is a huge.
It's massive, to be quite honest with you, Katie.
Huge. So it's terrifying for parents out there, I'm sure.
It is, because what we're looking at facing the 1st of January is that, in light of what Boric has said this evening, there's 1,300 childcare providers that he cannot be named. He has failed to find an underwriter for them. He also said he spent the last 6 months working on it. So I'm very surprised that the minister is stunned to just find out about it now. He also said he's gone to 35 other insurance companies looking actually to seek an underwriter firm, and he's failed to do that. So what are we left with?
Could you go back on that? The minister said yesterday that she hasn't had any representations from people saying that there had been issues around insurance up to the last week or two.
Yeah, which I find very hard to believe, because the number of representations came into my office last April when this was sort of muting. There was a press release that we just dug out today that where I had it flagged and where people would have contacted me, but they also would have contacted the minister's office as well. I'm sure, Kathleen, you were the same way. So what we have is 1,300 childcare providers this evening are being told they have to go and find alternative insurance. We've only one left in the market, and from what I can gather, those that are seeking alternative quotes, we're looking at 300% increase. So
So what are we talking about then?
We're going from 1,500 euros to 4,500, going from 3,000 to 9,500. The lady on Drive Time yesterday evening quoted her bill. But we have 1,300 of them, and we have to keep this in context as well. The number of parents, the number of children, the number of employees. It is staggering to think that parents are going to have no options as to, is one of them going to have to give up work? And these are the parents that get up early every morning to go out to work. These are the parents that are paying ferocious childcare costs, approximately 184 per week. And Friday evening is coming. This is the scary thing about it. Friday evening is coming. And
it seems extraordinary that we are this close to this cliff edge.
Absolutely.
That we haven't had, there's been no spade work been done.
So I can't understand. At this stage, I really do think, where a minister returned 60 million last year to Pascal unspent, I think at this stage, if we've 1,300, we know the numbers games on this, what the cost will be. I think if every childcare provider was to come up and say that of the 1,300, this is what I'm short, I need 3,000. I do think she needs to consider some sort of an intervention, or we won't have creches on the 1st of January.
Would that be what Sinn Féin would be saying as well? That basically a subvention for creche operators?
What we need to see in relation to this is a short-term plan for the emergency situation that we're in now, and then a longer term plan.
Which is to subvent the premiums that are being demanded by this one insurer.
But I will say that most workers and providers listening into this is the final nail in the coffin for them. They've been dealing with a lot of issues around re-registration, issues around not enough funding. For example, the ECCE year that people will know is called the free preschool year, which is not actually totally free, but that they don't get enough money to actually run the services. It turns out to be €5 an hour per child when you actually break it down. So they've been actually running on a shoestring for a long time. A lot of people as well, particularly in rural areas, I represent a lot of rural towns and villages, people are putting in their own money. They're going to the credit union, they're dipping into if they have savings. I spoke to a woman today who actually has a second job. She gets not one single penny from her creche. She has a second job and she keeps it going because she's employing three people in a rural town that will be without work. So it's a disaster for the children. It's a complete disaster for parents and it's a disaster for all those workers. But I will say the minister is totally asleep at the wheel in relation to the early years and childcare sector. She thinks because she brought in the affordable childcare scheme, she solved all the problems. She hasn't. She's created huge issues for people and she needs to get an emergency fund. She needs to come into the Dáil tomorrow and announce that. Absolutely. And say it will be in place for January. And then they need to look at long term, what way do we see our childcare and early years service in this country? It should be seen as a public service and not a for-profit one. Because once you have profit in there, there's always going to be question marks over it.
Kieran?
Yeah, I was probably well aware of this, but I actually wanted to find out what actually was actually happening here. My understanding is Allianz control about two-thirds of the market, and then this company, Ironshore, which were the other big provider, have left the market.
That's right.
And that has left, we'll say, 1,000...
1,300,
In, we'll say, not being, at the moment, be able to get insurance, right?
Yes.
But there is a market there. So the question really is, and I suppose just a couple of points. Number one, everyone wants to see the childcare facilities opening. Number two, we need a functioning insurance market. And what we have to be certain is you don't have unintended consequences where the state enters a market and suddenly you have, and we see Allianz, you were saying the insurance premiums have gone up, that they would pull back from the market. It's something that I've spoken to the ministers on. It's something I
about
think...
About the crash in particular?
About the insurance issue. I just want to see precisely how we can find a method through where insurance will be provided. It is worrying for parents.
Sorry, because I'm just what has struck me about this, as I was just saying to Anne there, is we seem to have sleepwalked into this situation where we're a week away from having 1,300 crèches without insurance.
My understanding is Ironshore have pulled. I'm not certain that was fully expected, but they have pulled and they would have been, they would have covered, and I think there would have been other insurance companies filling that particular insurance role previously. Allianz have 2/3 of the market for a long period of time. And I think what we now have to do is we have to explore ways that can the market provide the insurance for these crèches and for these childcare facilities, which is extremely important. I know it's very worrying for parents.
Well, we need to know this week.
We're not going to sit back and wait for the market to sort this out, surely, are we?
No, we're not. But the point, I suppose, I'm trying, there is a market there. It's not fair to say that.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that. Yeah. I actually agree with you. There is a market there. Yeah. But there's a cost factor that the childcare provider can't afford the cost or the difference.
And the question there, Annie, is, and that's why I believe strongly that we have to ensure that the childcare facilities have insurance.
So are you saying that you are fundamentally against intervention here to help?
No, I would like to see. I'm always worried about unintended consequences, where you suddenly have insurance companies cherry picking, and then you have many others where we will not be able to get insurance in the normal way.
But if you're a week away from being uninsured, and you have 50 parents,
this is something that the government are well aware of, and it's something that I discussed at length tonight, and I'll be doing it again tomorrow to see what can be done.
The problem, I think, for the government, if I can just interject very briefly, I think the problem for the government is that there's a very limited amount of time to try to resolve this now. Mm-hmm. And if you have a government subvention for the crèche sector and the childhood sector, then what about other businesses that have seen their insurance costs?
Castle operators.
What about the insurance operators who haven't lost their cover and are still paying their premiums? Do they get a subvention as well? Where do you draw? But you're going to face calls from everybody to get money from the state. So I mean, it's a complicated issue.
The insurance market, it's there.
The insurance market is dysfunctional at this stage, surely.
I'm saying that there may be a view out there that 2/3 of the providers have insurance or have access to insurance.
But the trouble is we don't have a capacity. See, we have a sector at the moment that has actually walked into a crisis. That's where we have childcare. We have problems with registration, re-registration. We have problems with insurance. We have problems with wages. We have problems with not enough capacity. So at this staff moment retention. In time, and we have a minister who is, and I don't like saying this, is keeping a complete hands distance on this. This didn't happen overnight.
I couldn't agree with that.
No, come on here.
No, it's Kieran, she's totally.
I've spoken to the minister.
Yeah, but if that is the case, then start coming to me with solutions. Give me some solutions, because we're all saying the problems that can be faced if somebody intervenes in the market and everything else.
Yeah, but you can't just have the minister create a fund of 60 million and just dispense it immediately.
No, it's actually 4.5 million would be the cost of the difference.
This is something
we need to consider.
That
something
major unintended consequences. Side by side with that, we have to.
So I'll tell you.
Then, then here,
can we have one voice, please? And I want to let Aon in, but I want to ask a question, because the other side of this story, is what we learned from that central bank report,
which
is that the insurance industry had pulled the wool over a lot of our eyes for a very long time, and all this talk about
not
all the fraudulence,
eyes.
Well, a lot of people's eyes, and all the talk that we have to charge these massive premiums because all this fraudulent claims and stuff. But what I'm saying is that is this the industry we're going to turn to now to sort out this problem?
Look, there's two issues here. One is the nature of the insurance, culture or industry in Ireland, and the other is the issue that we have allowed the private sector almost completely to own the childcare. I'm going to use the word market. The state has abdicated its responsibility in the early years childcare sector, and now finds itself aghast that there's an issue. The market has no conscience, and the insurance market has no conscience. Mm-hmm. 3 years ago, the IMF said that insurance costs in Ireland are three times the European average. Motor insurance is up 42% in the last 10 years. The assumption has always been that it's all these claims that are being made and the courts are driving up insurance. Not so. There's actually very little evidence that that's the problem. The problem is that there's a massive amount of a profiteering going on. So what I would suggest is that, look, we're not going to solve overnight the provision of childcare to a sort of a Scandinavian model that I would like to see overnight. Mm. That's not going to happen. Anne is quite right that we need a quick fix solution. You're putting a price tag of 4.something million.
4.5 million.
I think with a bit of imaginative thinking, and with the best will in the world, unintended consequences, when it comes to other sectors, we always seem to find the money when things need to happen. You know what I mean? So I would say, Let's plug the gap. But in the meantime, but I think the state has to intervene, and it has in other areas. If the State Claims Agency, the Irish Public Bodies Insurance, who have provided insurance in other areas, that the state could do in this area as well. It is not realistic long term to be indemnifying that type of price tag. But let's look differently at the childcare model we have in the country, and let's also point the finger in the direction it needs to be pointed at, which is not just this idea that everybody's getting exorbitant claims in the courts, but more likely that the insurance companies are paying itself.
Can I agree with you on one thing? We had the insurance companies in before the Finance Committee in June and October, and I did a bit of bookkeeping myself as an accountant, and I found that the insurance companies were looking for roughly a return of 5%. I found an average. The average companies, over five of the six companies, were making profits of 10%. A super profit about 5%.
Which is more or less exactly what that central bank report is saying now.
Mine was a much rough, but it nevertheless reasonably accurate. If you look at the central bank's report yesterday, right, it clearly shows that they're making, in my view, they're still ripping off customers in terms of motor insurance. We have seen this on the CSO in the last year. We have seen a slight decrease in motor insurance of about the order of 6%, nowhere near what it should be. And what we have is we have the insurance company blaming the legal profession, the legal profession blaming insurance companies. And ultimately, all the person who's getting ripped off is the customer.
Yeah. Katie, just before we go on, just say one thing. Sean Sherlock, Kathleen Function, and Anne Rabbitt have submitted topicals for tomorrow morning, and we're hoping that they will be selected. It's on the same issue, the three of us. This is right across party.
On the crèche insurance issue in particular,
And I am hoping
And you're calling for this emergency fund,
absolutely.
Is that?
Yeah. And we're asking the minister to come into the Dáil tomorrow evening under topicals. And I'm hoping herself and government will come with a solution. Yeah. Because to be honest with you,
the minister's opponent is very much on top of this and wants to get
But she was shocked up to yesterday, so I don't think she is on top of
it. But we have to put this in context. The amount of parents that are left with no options on the 1st of January. To be quite honest with you, we don't need to raise it to a level where people can't enjoy their Christmas. But what they're looking at is who's going to mind their child on the 1st? Because you cannot operate childcare for
family. And we all want to find solutions.
And all the workers.
It's not just in Dublin, it's right across the country.
If you have to find a crash solution for yourself in a year's time,
it occupies your brain. Yeah. If you have to think about one in a few weeks' time, it's going to absolutely take over.
Drive you crazy.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Well, we will keep an eye on that tomorrow, and hopefully we will have further developments on it, and we will follow them. But I want to move on now, because speaking of plugging gaps and bailouts there, the FAI. Yeah. Again, another refusal to go before the Oireachtas Committee. This follows what I can only imagine was a very tense meeting last night with Minister Shane Ross, after which I was listening to the Minister this morning, confirming that he had flatly refused to consider a bailout of the organisation. Where is this going to go? I mean, is the Minister taking a very aggressive approach now
an in-round pin report that was commissioned by Sports Ireland, which is the COSI report. Sports Ireland are coming before the Oireachtas Sports Committee tomorrow, as is Minister Ross and Minister Brendan Griffin. The FAI should be there. For me, it's pretty straightforward.
But they're not going to be, and they've made it clear that they've no intention.
When it boils down to, this is about ensuring that the great work that junior clubs and various clubs do up and down the country, that that's protected. The government are looking at putting measures in place to ensure the funding gets to them. There is a need for a radical restructure within the FAI. And I think Minister Ross and Minister Griffin are meeting UEFA, because they're a key partner in this. And we have to find a way that we have a functioning and structure and properly, structurally, financially sound FAI. This is a serious a problem for the FAI itself, and we have to find something that's sustainable into the long term.
Yeah, Ian.
Yeah. Well, look, we're in the solutions business. The problem with football in Ireland is that it's never been politically powerful. It's played by people who aren't politically powerful traditionally. It's loved in areas of the country that aren't necessarily politically powerful. It has had very few political friends. So when it comes to a moment of crisis, reputationally, it doesn't deserve a huge amount. Mm. And unfortunately, the areas of the country, like football, I put my hands up here. To me, it is such a crucial game because of where it is played and loved, and where it goes to parts of disadvantaged communities in particular, where and touches the hearts of people there and lifts people more than I imagine any other sport does. Mm. And particularly in working class areas, and particularly amongst young men, even though the women's
everywhere.
Game is...
But it's everywhere.
It is everywhere, but it is particularly the game of you might say, disadvantaged communities traditionally, okay? But it is everywhere, I would accept that. Now, either we save this game or it's going to die. There's meetings happening, and there's people who care passionately about the game, who are willing to find solutions. As Anne said, you know, we should be in the solutions business. There is what happened in Welsh FA previously. They did the whole sort of good bank, bad bank idea of splitting up the organisation. So UEFA potentially could step in and say, right, we'll cover the international side, the commercially viable side, the League of Ireland side, and the grassroots side. If you separate it out and have a different entity altogether, the state could step in there potentially and fund the 200 staff members who were worried about losing their jobs, the RDOs, the people who do community football in the areas of which I've just described.
Now, can I just make one quick point? There is a point as well, like, there may actually be a positive dimension out of this.
Yeah.
The League of Ireland itself, right? So, for instance, we have Limerick FC in Limerick, hugely important. It's a senior club, right? We'd like to see it being saved and coming back. The structure that will work with, I'm not certain. I do know one thing, that the FAI itself and the COSI report says that the state cannot step in terms of its financial strength or structure at the moment. So, but we have to find something that whatever is put together that works. And UEFA would be key to this.
Okay,
governed by UEFA.
The FAI are public enemy number one at the moment, the management anyway. And so Shane Ross is
getting a lot of votes and having a go at the FAI.
Yeah, so Shane Ross, he's getting some easy headlines, and you know, he's talking to place. But I think that he's been long on kind of voluble rhetoric and really short on solutions and answers. And I think that maybe, you know, the tone and temperament of these comments. I mean, there's 200 people facing into Christmas who don't know whether whether they're going to have jobs. And I know that kicking John Delaney is fun and kicking around the management is fun, but there are people's jobs on the line. There are teams, there are community groups.
But let's finish first.
I think the tenor of the comments is okay. You know, fair enough. You can have 24 hours, 48 hours where you give them a good kicking. But I mean, that gets boring after a while, and people are going to be looking for answers. People are going to be looking at their local teams, local kids playing around the country.
I do wonder politically is this going to turn and turn badly in terms of the very aggressive stance that has been taken.
A report was commissioned by Sports Ireland. That's been referred to Angara Shigan, the Director of Corporate Enforcement. There is a backdrop there. Absolutely agree in terms of 200 people working the FAI. The government are going to meet UEFA because they're have to be a key player in finding a solution here. And for me, we have to get the FAI itself. Personally speaking, I'd like to see it. I think there's a root and branch. Junior clubs, I know in Limerick, are exceptionally strong.
And okay, you've got in about the Limerick. Okay,
yeah, let's come over here for a second. At the end of the day, while everybody's going around meeting all these powerful people within UEFA and everything else, could we just look after the clubs and the communities and the 200 development workers?
Yes.
But let's be very clear about this. Let's ensure that their wages continue to be paid while we go up along the ladder to get the solutions.
There's a mechanism at the moment, we'll say Women's International, that's the phone.
And now we knew about their tracksuits now 2 years ago. We were very lucky to get them.
In terms of the, we'll say, the field sports around the country, the funding will be put in place there. This is more about the structural reform of, I suppose, corporate FAI.
Well, did you know what? It needs to be divided straight down the middle so that we, when this is not to happen again, because we know UEFA don't like governmental involvement or
anything else like that.
Let's park UEFA and the international teams and all out over there,
but let the state mind the communities. The state can't run sporting organisations.
Well, hold on, the state was able to throw 16 million at the Greyhound crowd.
I was waiting how long before the Greyhound would turn out.
But we give it to the GAA, we give it to all different organisations.
Isn't that run?
No, but look at, there's nothing to stop them putting in a good governance structure within the community sector of it, and at the same time let whoever wants to look after the international teams.
Those type of solutions can't be found. You have to speak one voice, one day in, day out
in local communities right around the country where people step up to the plate and are only delighted to the clubs.
That'll all be done, but there has to be a context.
15 seconds.
Okay, first of all, I think the FAA should be coming in to the Oireachtas Committee to answer questions. They're not doing themselves any favours. I do believe that the local groups, as any local community group, it's all down to volunteers. They should be protected. But certainly the people at the top, I think, have very serious questions to answer. I don't want to see them getting any more public money.
Okay, one text before we go. Katie, the outpouring of emotion tonight, I'm in bits. It's more emotional than the Late Late Toy Show, says Paul in Limerick. And that's what we aspire to, folks, the Late Late Toy Show. Tonight's programme was produced by Regina Henley. Research was by A.B. Philburn Bowman. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Condon, and Jamie Doyle was on sound. And now we hand over to Colin Murray on Late Date.